Welcome to the Sickle Cell Disease edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the SCD community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. June 19th is World Sickle Cell Day, and to mark the occasion, we're talking with Kim Smith-Whitley, Site Lead Advisor for Scientific and Clinical Affairs at Pfizer. Kim was also a panelist at the recent World Orphan Drug Congress, which took place at National Harbor, Maryland. Before joining Pfizer, Kim was Executive Vice President and Head of Research and Development at Global Blood Therapeutics, which was acquired last year by Pfizer in a $5.4 billion deal. A thought leader with over 30 years of experience, Kim also served as Clinical Director of Hematology and Director of the Comprehensive Sickle Cell Center at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. In addition, she's a former Chief Medical Officer of the Sickle Cell Disease Association of America. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Larry. Wonderful to join you.
So, June 19th, World Sickle Cell Day. Why is it June 19th, and what is the significance of this day?
June 19th was initially selected as World Sickle Cell Day by a committee of advocates, scientists, and researchers who felt that it would be significant to have this recognition globally. It was just happenstance that that day was also the day that Texas saluted emancipation of slaves in that country, noted as Juneteenth.
Well, I wanted to get right into the numbers if we can. The feeling at this recent Congress is that for many years, sickle cell was kind of an unrecognized disease that really didn't get the importance that it merited. How many people around the world have sickle cell? Where are the patients found? And is the situation getting worse?
That's a really good question. And we estimate that there are 4 million living with sickle cell disease worldwide. Sickle cell disease is a rare condition here in the U.S. with approximately 100,000 affected. 300,000 are born annually with sickle cell disease. Unfortunately, in countries that are not well-resourced to care for individuals with sickle cell disease, many children, 50 to 90%, die before 5 years of age. We have had great advances in the clinical care of children and adults with sickle cell disease here in the U.S. We have therapies that reduce the frequency of pain episodes, which are commonly experienced, and we have curative therapies such as bone marrow transplant for those individuals that have a brother or sister that's a full match.
Right. For many years, the feeling, especially among Black Americans, was that the pharmaceutical industry did not take this disease very seriously. Is that still the case? Is that still the perception?
We have seen great advances in the last 10 years in private industries' interest in sickle cell disease. When you think historically that the first individual with sickle cell disease was described in 1910, and then the genetics of sickle cell disease were described in 1949, it wasn't until 1995 that we had disease-modifying therapies in a chemotherapeutic agent that was borrowed from individuals, the treatment of individuals with cancer, to modify fetal hemoglobin production, which lessens the frequency of complications in individuals with sickle cell disease. And that was done in 1995 by investigators funded in part by the National Institutes of Health. However, since 2017, we have seen 3 new therapies emerge for sickle cell disease. And it is very reassuring that industry continues to support the advancement of therapies for individuals with sickle cell disease. And that can be seen in the number of clinical trials that are ongoing in the sickle cell space. And many quote that there are over 30 trials currently ongoing for sickle cell.
Now, for a long time, it was seen as mainly a black disease, but we know that people other than African Americans, including people in India, South Asia, and the Middle East, also we've seen countries here in the Middle East that where sickle cell is a big problem.
Exactly, and I think that one of the things that needs to, just as a reminder to our audience, is that individuals with sickle cell trait are protected from severe complications of malaria. So in countries where malaria was endemic, the sickle gene popped up in five different regions. And so the pattern of sickle cell disease primarily follows the pattern of individuals who are descendants from countries where malaria was endemic decades ago. And so it is very common amongst individuals that come from communities of color, but we also see it in a pattern in India, in a pattern in Mediterranean, because sickle cell disease can also combine the sickle gene with other hemoglobinopathy traits that are common in other countries, such as thalassemia trait, and that can actually be a form of sickle cell disease.
So in other words, this could be like nature's way of protecting people in the tropics from malaria.
Exactly.
Very interesting. I wanted to ask you just a bit about research. We know that many companies have been pursuing gene therapies for all kinds of diseases. And for sickle cell, a potential gene therapy could run $2 to $3 million per patient. That obviously would put gene therapy out of reach of the vast majority of those with sickle cell. What is the potential in the United States for gene therapy to address the problem?
I think that one of the things that I've focused on in my career, and I can continue to focus on here at Pfizer, is the development of therapies that decrease the symptoms of sickle cell. I think that it's important to focus on all therapies, both curative and other therapies, to decrease the morbidity and mortality associated with sickle cell disease, which you know can range 30 years younger for mortality compared to other African Americans without sickle cell disease, right? So we still have a big issue to face here. I think that gene therapies will possibly fall into the same category as bone marrow transplant. And I really want to focus on bone marrow transplant because that is a therapy that theoretically has been accessible to all with sickle cell disease in the U.S. Now for over a decade. And you have to have a brother or sister that's a perfect match in order to get a bone marrow transplant, and that brother or sister cannot have sickle cell disease. So even though it is rare to find a sibling, there are those that have sibling matches that have elected not to go forward. And most of the advocates that I speak with and individuals living with sickle cell disease reflect the sentiment that they should not have to trade their fertility for a cure. And what they mean by that, Larry, is that many of these cellular therapies require chemotherapy before they can actually get the cellular infusion. Mm-hmm. And that chemotherapy has complications. It can lower your ability to fight infection. It can make you require platelet transfusions and blood transfusions. And those are limited until engraftment. But there are also longer term complications such as infertility. And access to care for fertility preservation is not equal in the sickle cell community. You can be in a state that will pay for fertility preservation from third-party payers if you have that transplant because you have a malignancy. But if you have that transplant because you have sickle cell, you cannot get access to that same fertility preservation. This is a big barrier, I think, that we need to overcome long-term with cellular therapies. And I would really hope that we continue to investigate abilities to cure individuals with sickle cell disease, such as possibly in vivo cellular therapies that don't require chemotherapy. And that's going to take a lot of science and a lot of research, but I think that we can get there over time.
Let me ask you, so at Pfizer, what's in the pipeline for sickle cell at current?
So we're really excited because we have Oxbryta, which is a therapy that really reduces the likelihood that the hemoglobin will polymerize and lead to sickling. And we have individuals that have improvement in their anemia because of receiving Oxbryta. And then we have two late stage assets, GBT601, which many refer to as the next generation Oxbryta, and then another called Inclacumab, which is a anti-P selectin that should limit the frequency of painful episodes over time, we hope. And those latter two are still in research stages.
Very nice. Anything approaching phase three trials at this point?
Those later stage assets are really more in phase two, coming up hopefully within the next calendar year. We'll have to see with Inclacumab where we stand as we get some data accumulated from an ongoing trial.
Interesting. At the panel that you spoke on at the World Orphan Drug Congress, one of the panelists made a point. She said that it's not just a disease of pain, but also a disease of quality of life and shortened lifespan and isolation. You may have recalled, she said that in the state of Maryland, which has 4,000 to 5,000 patients, there are only four hematologists that treat sickle cell disease. I was astounded. Why is that? Is that nationwide as well?
So it is nationwide that we see limited numbers of individuals that I refer to as sickle cell experts in this space. I'm just going to give you my impression of why I think that this is limited. I believe that because sickle cell experts have been classically trained as hematologist oncologist, many of those that are trained in this area pursue careers in oncology and not in non-malignant hematology that would encompass sickle cell. And I think those that select non-malignant hematology often get involved with bleeding and clotting disorders and not hemoglobinopathies, such as sickle cell disease. So I think that that combined with the limited resources over the years for research in the sickle cell space, I think that also the stressors on the patient community with limited access to care and resources, which also challenges the healthcare system, that I think this is why we are seeing a lack of growth in those in the area that cares for children and adults living with sickle cell disease. It's a big problem, Larry, and we need to address it.
We're almost out of time. Last question I wanted to ask you. As an official of Pfizer and as a leading voice in the sickle cell community, and given that we do have this World Sickle Cell Day, June 19th, what can people like you do to increase awareness about the problem and work towards a solution?
First of all, Larry, I'd like to thank you for selecting this topic to discuss today. I think it is opportunities like this that bring visibility to sickle cell disease that should improve our ability to increase access to care, resources such as those needed for research and scientific investigation, and partnerships between industry, government, and healthcare systems to really bring therapies forward for individuals with sickle cell disease that they deserve. I think just being aware of World Sickle Cell Day is important. There are many that are trying to quote unquote shine a light on sickle cell disease. And we at Pfizer would encourage those to go out into their communities, find out what's happening locally with sickle cell in your area. There may be walks coming up. Remember that September is Sickle Cell Awareness Month. We have this one day in June, but we have a whole month in September to increase awareness for sickle cell disease.
Kim, thank you so much for speaking with us. Appreciate your time. We'll keep up the awareness as much as we can on our end. Thank you very much. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.